Yeah, the San Diego Padres. Thought I'd play a little bit of inspirational music to get us inspired today for our little interview and our little time together. Of course, this is the Friar Phil Show, and welcome. I hope you're having a good Thursday and day off from Padres baseball. I have a difficult time with that, though, because I just don't know what to do with myself if there's no baseball and there's just, what, five games left? Four games left to the season. But fortunately, we're going to go into the postseason, which I'm a little worried about. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. All right, I've got SD21. That's his Twitter handle. He goes by the initials ET, and he's here to join us this afternoon. Hi, ET. How you doing?
Pretty good, Fire Phil. How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. Little concerned about the team with what we saw the last couple of days.
Yeah, the bats seem to be a little bit of funk right now, and it's kind of weird how you go from, you know, the bullpen woes earlier in the season with the bats being on fire, and then all of a sudden here we are going close to the postseason. We made it, but now it seems like the bullpen and the pitching's been pretty good. It's just that the bats have gone quiet.
Yeah, the offense has just died against the Angels, yeah, too. That's what got me. You know, the Angels are having a resurgence a little bit with
three out of four for the Angels. That's kind of disturbing, but maybe, you know, maybe it's just the time of when it's just like they have our number, I guess, and just for some reason they just seem to catch us in a funk. And I know they had a couple left-handers that just, you know, the Padres seem to be struggling with left-handers for some odd reason over the last month or so. So it's just something we just have to, you know, see what happens next week.
Yeah, and this week it'll be very telling to see if after this day off, if they start getting into that championship mode. You know, we're a postseason team now. We're actually going to the postseason, so act like it, you know? That's the one thing the Dodgers do. They act like they're a winning team. And these guys have to go out and do that, act like a winning team. And that means, you know, doing smart things, not hitting the first pitch after the pitcher of the other team has walked the bases loaded. You don't go after the first pitch. I know Manny Machado likes those first pitch fastballs to hit, but you just don't do it in that case. You've got the bases loaded by a guy that was walking most of the people that were on base, yep, if not all of them, and you hit the first pitch and you hit it into a 1-2-3 out double play. Yeah, that I just, yeah, I was thinking, okay, maybe he'll have a grand slam. Let's see what Manny can do when he came up, and he did that, and it was just like all the wind came out of my sails as well.
Yeah, Slam Diego has been, you know, it's been a blessing, but it's also been, you know, our anticipation for a grand slam has just been, you know, magnified when, of course, you break a season record of four consecutive, and you've hit seven in all this whole season. So it's like, you know, we're expecting a grand slam practically. They have that slam counter on Fox Sports San Diego.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All the time. And they're like, okay, we're at the slam counter number seven. We gotta hit another one. And then, you know, here comes Cronenworth, hits a bomb to make a number, you know, number five. And then next thing you know, Myers hits one. And it's just another one. I'm like, oh, man. So it's just like the anticipation for a slam has been a more, you know, emphasized. And it's just like, you know, you want to see it, but then when you hit into a double play or they have bases loaded with nobody out or they can't score one run or only they only score one run the other day with the bases loaded, like twice, and it just, like, you know, it just deflates you pretty much as a fan.
And I think they need to get back to that Grand Slam mentality, you know, because when they were getting all those Grand Slams, they were playing like a championship team. And it was a team effort. It wasn't just me going up there wanting to get another home run on my record and be the big hero. It's me going up there and maybe hitting one into the gap, you know, to bring in a couple of runs, you know, that sort of thing. As I knock over things here in the studio. I'm clumsy, that's for sure. That's one thing people don't know about me. And speaking about knowing about people, one of the reasons I do this podcast and decided to start doing it this year is so I can get to know some of the people that we know on Twitter, but we really don't know, you know, on a more personal level. So could you start off by telling me a little bit about yourself, how you got into baseball, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, Friar Phil, it was back in 78. I was a little kid. Believe it or not, that was my first Padre game at the time. It was in the San Diego Stadium. And you know, I don't remember a lot about that game, but I do remember that I was actually a Dodger fan, believe it or not. My brothers used to, because my brother's actually still a Dodger fan, but I still remember the Dodger camp that I used to have when I was a kid, and because I was a Garvey fan. And my brothers told me one time, like, yeah, you were cheering for Garvey that night. I was like, really? It was? So as I grew up, and when the Padres made one of their biggest moves in, you know, ever in free agency, or they picked up Garvey, I was like, wait a minute, he's a Padre now. So then I was just like ecstatic, and you know, I hung my Out of the Blue poster in my bedroom. I got that from school, like, oh, they're passing out Out of the Blue because the Garv is now a Padre. And so I was excited then. And then, of course, you know, 83 he got hurt, but 84 was something that, you know, made me a Padre fan for life. And, you know, with Tony Gwynn, I mean, there's a guy named Tony Gwynn that hit 351 that year. And he basically, you know, I was watching him. And throughout all my years as a Padre fan, you know, I've watched him, you know, play right field. And one thing that a lot of fans, like current fans today, don't remember is that when he, you know, he won gold gloves, too, besides his batting titles. And he would constantly play that right field like I've never seen anybody play right field before, because he would take a double down the line on right. And at the old stadium, the bullpen would, the opponent's bullpen would be down the right field line. So when a batter, left-handed batter, shoot it down the right field line, it would go into the bullpen, over the mound of the bullpen, and Tony would get the ball and disappear in the corner. If you're sitting in home plate, and the home plate seats are at down first or down the first base side, you'd see Tony run, and then he'd disappear into the. And then all you see is his arm throw the ball from the corner of the right field foul pole right to second base and get the guy out. I'm like, what?
That must have been amazing to see.
Oh, he did that several times. So, you know, that to me was just one of the highlights, of besides all the multiple hit games that I was there at that. The Murph and Qualcomm, and that was just something else. And you know, back in when I was, just because I was in the Air Force back in the early 2000s, and one thing that I remember was coming back home. It was right after 9/11, and you know, it was all, you know, just coming home. I just felt good. I need to be with family. So my girlfriend at the time, she's now my wife, she took me to a Padre game, and it was the last, you know, it was pretty much the last time I'll ever see Tony Gwynn play. And at the time, he was injured that season in 2001. He was hurt.
Yeah.
I followed the team. You know, I was stationed in New Mexico, so I followed the team out there and was watching Tony Gwynn. He was only getting pinch hits, and you know, he came up to bat, and I guess it was against San Francisco, I believe, in September of 2001. And he came up and he tied the game at two with an RBI double. And Bochy put him in. He came in, had a double, and then he left. And of course, that was the last moment I remember of watching Tony Gwynn hit. Out of all this, the years as a kid, watching him have multiple hit games, and what a way to end his and my, you know, my fandom as growing up, to watch him hit his last hit there with a double. They all end up winning the game that night. I think Mike Dar hit a towering home run to right to actually win the game. So that was a great memory too. And Mike Dar, you know, rest in peace to Mike Dar and his you know, back in the day there. So so let's go back. Yeah, so 1978, I'm a Padre fan in 84 through the 90s and stuff. Basically, I was born in Tennessee but raised in San Diego. So I was, you know, a big sports fan, San Diego sports fan. Of course, you know, Charger fan. I was actually a Dolphin fan in the 80s because of Dan Marino. But as the 90s Chargers came with Bobby Ross, Stan Humphries, Natron Means, that's when I was like, okay, this we got a team here in San Diego. And the 92 Chargers, that's the, you know, that just shocked pretty much the NFL that year. And too bad we lost to the Dolphins because I was torn that year. But I mean, they got shut out 31-0. But,
oh my!
Yeah, that was yeah. But then, you know, 2 years later in '94, the Chargers paid them back with that come from behind win in the stadium. So, but yeah, so you know, been a big sports fan. Yes, I am a Lakers fan too. So a lot, you know, a lot of Twitter followers are probably wondering, why are you a Los Angeles sports fan? Well, you know, I was Laker fan since the 80s. I mean, you got, you know, the Magic, Kareem, Byron Scott, Michael Cooper, you know, all the Laker greats and James Worthy. And so it just kept, you know, it just grew with me with being a Laker fan. And not necessarily a Clipper fan. You know, I went to a couple games when I was young at the Sports Arena with the Clippers, but it was just Laker gold, Laker purple and gold for me.
Yeah, with like you said, with all the stars that have come off that team.
Yeah, this, you know,
well,
Showtime was the time during the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was just, you know, they were always there against the Celtics and always there, you know, the rivalry was just, you know, that's when basketball, right, nowadays basketball is all three-pointers, you know. Mm-hmm. The fundamentals are pretty much, you know, again, the center and the big man is not really the focal point of your game anymore, which, you know, I miss that because, you know, when you know, bang inside and you get the guy at the post and you know Kareem's skyhook or Shaq's dunks, it's just, you kind of miss that. So now everybody's throwing up threes all over the place and, you know, increasing possession time, throwing up threes. And the thing is, they're making them. That's the crazy part, you know, with the,
yeah,
they're making threes all over the place. So that's what's amazing about it.
It's funny how games change over time, you know, like,
yeah,
we have the change now of the designated hitter in the National League, and I'm thinking that it's probably there to stay.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the designated hitter has definitely put a different spin in the strategies of baseball, I mean, especially in the National League. I mean, how do you, like, go up there when, you know, when you have runners on in scoring position and then here comes Paddock has to hit?
Yeah.
Like,
we're like, trying to get him to
that.
We're trying to get him to pitch correctly.
Yeah.
Now, I'd hate to see him up there with a bat.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
And, you know, the DH works, you know, for me. You know, you've got people like Moreland who we picked up, and there's not really a place for him at first base with Hosmer there, but he can DH, you know. He's another one, you know, that needs a wake-up call for his bat. I don't know what the hell these guys need to do. They need to get some goddamn coffee or caffeine before the game so they're riled up, and it's not like we're looking at a funeral march every time
absolutely.
They come up to the damn plate, because that's what it looked like to me during the games with the Angels. It was just lackadaisical, and, like, you know, we don't give a fuck because these aren't going to really mean anything, but they would have meant something yesterday if we had won the game, because St. Louis lost their game, so we would have clinched that fourth seed spot and the home advantage. So the first three games of the playoffs would have been played at Petco Park. Now, they still can do it. I'm not sure how it's done. Somebody was asking me on Twitter about it. I told them I'm absolutely clueless. I just retweet what other people retweet about these playoffs because it's so confusing. And it's not like it used to be. Okay, you've got, you know, the three divisions, winners, and a wild card, and there you go. That's easy to figure out. Now it's, you know, first seed and eighth seed and fourth seed. So I think we play the fifth seed, which looks like it might be the Marlins. And then after that, if we do good and we win that series, then we play the one or the eighth seed. And, of course, that's between Milwaukee right now and the Dodgers. So if the Dodgers win that, we're going to end up playing the Dodgers. So it's time to get their shit together.
Exactly.
And like I said earlier, start playing like a championship team. I mean, how much of this newfangled playoff stuff do you understand and comprehend?
Oh, it's I'm just kind of going with the flow for our Phil. It's just kind of like, you know, I mean, it's just like, well, it's like the NBA playoffs, you know. It's one plays the 8, 2 plays the 7, 3 plays the 6, and 4 plays the 5. So it all depends on who's there and record and stuff. So the concept is different, but you know, it's kind of refreshing, but yes, it's definitely confusing. Back at the take of the hitting right now, Mitch Moreland right now is, you know, he hasn't come in and made the impact that I expected. I mean, he's struggling. I mean, the guys that came in, I mean, when you look at who's been struggling as of late, of course, you know, you have Fernando Tatis Jr., who's, he's in a bit of a funk. I think he's pressing a little, you know, a lot of times that he's, they're pitching him a lot inside. They're throwing him outside sliders and stuff. He just can't seem to catch up to fastballs that are even right down the middle. And you got, you know, Grisham's been struggling ever since that home run against Kershaw. He's been struggling. You know, Hosmer and Pham are just coming off the IL, so they got to get their feet wet again in the batter's box. Moreland again struggling since the, I mean, you go from a 328 hitter in the American League to a 178 hitter in the National League. That's hard to describe there. Even Nola. I mean, Nola was a 308 hitter. He's batting under 200. So, you know, and Cronenworth's been, he's been fairly consistent. He's kind of gone into a little spin there. But, he's still a rookie, but he's still in the high, you know, 290s, 300 area.
Mm-hmm.
And you got Profar. You know, the guys that have been really been impressive and pretty consistent over the last month have been Machado, of course, Myers, and Profar. So
Profar really has been a really, really surprising addition to the club and what he's done. And you know what he's doing? He's not doing too much. And I think a lot of these guys are trying to do too much when they go up at the plate. And Profar doesn't try and do too much. He tries to get a pitch that's a good pitch for him. He's not trying to hit it out of the park. He's trying to get a hit, and he, 9 times out of 10, gets a timely hit, you know, a single or a double to move the runners around. And that's what the rest of these guys need to do. You know, stop trying to hit home runs. Try and just do, you know, what needs to be done in that particular circumstance, you know, situational baseball.
Yes. I mean, if you look at the success of this team this year, compared to years past, I mean, especially last year in 2019, you had Franmil, you had Renfro, and those guys, they were winning, but they were depending a lot on the home run, but a lot of those guys had, you know, on base percentages that are in the low 200s.
Right.
So like the difference of this team is like almost everybody gets on base. I mean, they've got high on base percentages. They know how to read pitch counts. They know how to get on. They somehow find a way to get on base. It's right now that they can't seem to get everybody in from scoring position, which is something I've noticed this season. Where, you know, besides the Slam Diego stuff, it's just sometimes they'll tend to just leave guys there when, and that was a big part of a baseball game that, you know, could have won the game. So it's just something that you know, we have to see what happens in the next few days. I mean, this series against the Giants is, to me, it's pretty crucial because it kind of shows, you know, where the mindset of this team is. You know, and plus momentum is a huge factor. I mean, I know I read a post the other day. It was a great tweet. He posted that the Padres in '98 were struggling going into the postseason and back then. And I think there was something like they were struggling to get runners in scoring position. But he basically said that they, you know, they were fledgling at the plate and stuff. And you know, everybody knows what happened in '98. So mm-hmm. You know, it just depends. It depends on, you know, who you're facing, how the team is, and it's all about getting on a roll. And I think for this team to, you know, get into the postseason with, you know, in a positive way, in a momentumous way, is to, you know, play well the next four games. And because, you know, without a doubt, either if you're facing the Marlins, you got to face that young kid. I forgot his name, but that one, you had that young pitcher, that young stud pitcher.
Oh yeah.
If you're facing St. Louis, and you know, St. Louis is always, you know, I know it's not a Tony La Russa managed team, but you know, it's they're St. Louis Cardinals, and they've always had the Padres number over the years in the playoffs. So, you know, that's something you gotta think about. You gotta, you know, in order to beat your best, you gotta be your best. So you gotta go out there and you know, just focus on getting the runs in and see what you can do. Not always, you know, not always go for that grand slam, but you got to get those guys in runners in scoring position. That's something that the Padres definitely need to focus on.
And get that garbage out of their head.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That, you know, I'm in a slump and I got, you know, fuck all that. Fuck that shit, you know. Yeah, exactly. Just go ahead, get up there, and do your best for the team. You know, and I think, you know, you get that crap out of your head, and you do better. We saw that with Paddock when he pitched the last time. You know, he got all that nonsense, you know, from Twitter and things his brother was feeding him, allegedly, and all the other crap that was swimming around in his head, you know, the poor me, you know, well, the fans are against me, that kind of shit. And he just went out and pitched like the sheriff, and he did fine.
Paddock's got great stuff. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He's got the potential to be a number one starter, if not a number one, number two. I mean, I think what bothers him a lot is he thinks a lot too. He thinks too much, I think. I think he goes out there and he says, I'm, you know, I got to have that sheriff persona. I got to match my pitching. I got to, you know, I got to get things going. But then, I know coming out of the minors, I mean, they said that he had, I think he was like a, they consider he only had like a two pitch repertoire,
mm-hmm.
like a fastball and maybe a cutter, I believe. So, I mean, the one thing I notice about Paddock is that when, you know, his out pitch, it's usually the fastball. It's usually, if he's down 0-2, you know, if it's 3-2, 2-2, he tries to, you know, throw that fastball either high or low and inside, and for some reason the location is not where it needs to be, and the guys rope it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get a hit off it, so... I mean, if you look at, say, let's look at Davies, for example. I mean, Davies is something, he doesn't have the overpowering stuff that Paddock has, but he has the, you know, he has that changeup. He doesn't have he only has like an 88-mile-an-hour fastball. It's kind of like Trevor Hoffman. Trevor used to be a flamethrower back in the early 90s when he first came up. He was hitting like 95, but then he figured out that changeup, and he's only regulated to 88 miles an hour. So.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, it's just crazy how, you know, two different style of pitching. One has, you know, focuses on location, you know, and not necessarily overpowering stuff. But, you know, for Paddock, I think he just needs to – he's one of those pitchers, I think, that thrive on fan interaction. He would do much better if fans were in the stands.
Yeah, I do too.
I think he honestly cares. I mean, he really cares about what, you know, I think he cares what the fan thinks, which, you know, is a detriment to, I think, to his game. I think he just needs to, you know, focus more on himself, you know, to get, you know, get his mindset going, especially in the playoffs. I mean, if Clevinger's not going to be, you know, available, if he's going to go on the IL, I mean, I hate to say that because, I mean, what we saw yesterday.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, he has to be ready. And like I said, you know, these, I remember yesterday when Morihon came in, right after Clevinger, and I had a little argument with one of the Twitter dudes, and it was fun. It was a fun little argument, but he was talking about how, you know, Morihon didn't know what he was doing. You know, he was basically saying Morihon was unprepared. He only had like 5 minutes to prepare. But for me, it's like, you know what? You're a major league pitcher. It's 2-0, and you got to hold that lead. You got to, you know, Tingler's expecting you to go in there, pitch 2 innings, at least 1 or 2 innings, to maintain it 2-0. You know, you don't go in there and give up a bomb to Otani, a bomb to Upton, and then a solo shot to Bemboom, the catcher, who was batting 192 and had 2 bombs that whole entire season so far. So it's like, and he's a left-handed hitter, so just kind of like mental lapse there. Yeah, I understand that he just like got the call within, you know, unexpectedly. But man, you can't make pitches like that. If you want to be ready for the postseason, if you want to be relied upon and being called upon, you got to be ready now. I mean, you got to prepare yourself mentally to get those outs. You can't just like throw a fastball or throw something over the plate, and all of a sudden the guy who hits 192 and hits 2 home runs over the fence, you're just like, oh great, mm-hmm. Now we're down 4-2. Whoa, great! Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, speaking of Clevinger, I'm checking right now. We're recording this right now. It's 12:30 p.m. here on Thursday, the 24th of September. And I'm checking now, and there's still no word on the Padres Twitter or the Fox Twitter about Clevinger and his MRI. I suspect they'll tell us something probably around the time they would normally put up the lineup for the club. Of course, there's no lineup today because there's no game. But sometime this afternoon, we should be hearing something about the MRI, and I hope it's just soreness and nothing else, because he would be part of that rotation that I would pick for the first 3 games of the playoffs.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I'd have Clevinger, and I'd have Lamette and Davies.
Yes.
For those 3 games, and Richards and Panic standing by in the bullpen in case we needed to call them in. So now we might be minus Clevinger, so it's going to probably be Paddock's big moment. Either Paddock or Richards, one of the two. And again, he's got to do the job. But, you know, with the pitchers, they're doing really good most of the games. The trouble is they're not getting the run support now. And if you're going to win a ball game, you've got to give your pitcher run support. If he's down, you know, a couple of runs and stuff, and you're not doing shit, and you're leaving the bases loaded with no outs, you know, it can frustrate the pitcher, I imagine, as well, and that affects his game, and it just, the whole thing goes down the goddamn toilet. And we don't want to do that, you know. We've been waiting for so many years now to be in the postseason, and we don't want, you know, us to flush it all away in the first 3 games, you know.
Yeah, I mean it's the first. I mean, I believe it's like a best 3 out of 5 in the first round. So, you know, for me, it's Lamette, Davies, Paddock. If it goes to a game 3. Paddock. I think Paddock has to step it up. He's gotta go out there and be the sheriff that he is capable of being. I mean, the thing with Richards, Richards has been erratic. I mean, that game against the Oakland A's a couple weeks ago. I mean, he was just dealing. His slider was just breaking everything. They were missing it. They just didn't know how to. You know, he looked like the Gary Richards of old. I mean, but if you look at how he's been starting, I mean, he's had a he's had a couple games where he couldn't even get out of the second inning. So it's just kind of like, you know, that, I think that's one of the reasons why Tingler wants him to come out of the pen, because he can, you know, showcase that slider if it's like at the sixth inning, if they're, to either hold a lead or not, give up a lead or anything like that. So I think it's, he's, they're trying to get him prepared in that mindset to be out of the bullpen. And, you know, it's just losing Clevinger would be pretty tough to swallow.
Yeah.
You know, Padre fans, I mean, we just got to get a hope for the best. And also, you know, we were winning before, before Clevinger came to the mix. So Clevinger just made, our pitching staff much better. But it's just going to be tough if he's not going to be available.
We just have to hope, that things will go well next Wednesday when we start, and hope that our opponent is a team like the Marlins or something that aren't, too difficult to beat. At that point, in that round, and then, I said, we go off to the next round, and it's either going to be Milwaukee, who's the eighth seed now, or the first seed, the Dodgers, the mighty, mighty Dodgers. Those bastards.
Those guys, I mean, it just baffles me how well these guys play. I mean, the guys are just go out there and go out and just do their stuff. I mean, it's crazy though too when you think about it. It's like every time guys like Dustin May or Gavin Lux or whatever, those guys just come up, and all of a sudden, boom, they're like major league stars already. I'm like, what the? Like how they hit on their minor league players, which is unbelievable, which is crazy. That's how good their management is that they I don't know how they bust their butt to find these talents all over, and for some reason they hit on. I mean, we being a Padres fan for practically almost 36 years now, 37 years now, and I've been through the tough times. I mean, with just not getting these players, but yet, and then just getting guys out of your hope. I mean, remember Sean Burroughs and guys like that who, when Hedges came up, he was like, yes, the kid could hit in the minors, but when he comes up, it's like, oh, gosh, what happened?
Big difference.
He plays a damn good defense, but you're only one-dimensional. So it's things like that that just kind of like, wow, it's like, how do they – just find these guys, and yet when they get the call, they come up and they just either just perform, and it's just mind-boggling how they hit on these prospects, and it's just crazy.
And I think what we're seeing with the Dodgers now is what we're going to see in maybe 2022 with the Padres.
Yeah,
More things come into fruition, things connect better. These guys learn how to play better, because we've got to realize too. These are young kids.
Yeah.
To me, they're young kids. Tatis is a young kid to me. I'm 57 years old, so I call them kids.
Yeah, it's sometimes we forget as fans that these are kids. I mean, Tatis, 21. He's got a whole career left still. He's got another probably 15 years to go or more. He's only 21 years old, and for him to continue to do what he's doing is crazy. Sometimes we forget that these are just kids. I mean, like Morejon, 23, Paddock, 24. All these guys are just starting their career. I mean, Paddock's only his second year in his career.
Yeah.
And, sometimes I know we criticize him and stuff, and we want him to be better because we know we've seen it. Of course, with any major leaguer, you're going to, get through struggles and stuff, and you just have to, these guys have to figure it out. So, just the one thing that, bothers me about bullpen days when I see Tingler. It's like, I really would like to see, that stop, but unfortunately I think with the playoff situation coming up with all the lack days of rest and stuff like that, you might actually see one of those bullpen days. And it just bothers me. I guess maybe I'm just an old guy, because I like seeing the fifth starter go out there, pitch five innings, and You know, because I'd like to see Morahone pitch more than, you know, start the game and then, you know, just like do only two innings. Yeah, he gives up a home run here, but it's only like 1-0, and it's, and he, you know, he only gave up, say, one or two hits, but no, he's out. He's out after second inning. Like, no, leave him in there. Let's see if he can do some more. How are these pitchers supposed to grow, you know, and become better players or better, if they're going to ever be a starter or something like that? How are they ever going to continue? But, you know, I you know, this whole, maybe I'm just a traditionalist or something when it comes to rotation, a five-man rotation or something like that. But I despise the bullpen case.
Yeah, me too. I just cringe when that's happening. I also despise that thing where you have to pitch to three batters now. That rule pisses me off because it takes the strategy doing the ball game, you know, for the manager, takes the strategy away in some cases. And, you know, they're doing all this shit, you know, because, well, the ball games are too long. Yeah, I don't know who the fuck is the asshole that complains about the baseball games being too long. But I tell you what, when I'm at the stadium, and for what you pay for the tickets and shit, you know, I want that fucking thing to go on as long as possible so I can spend as much time as possible in the stadium. So I don't care if it's a 3.5-hour game.
Yeah.
It's like, I want to be at the stadium. I want to see this. I don't know who the asshole is that complained about it, but whoever you are, shut up.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely even with the umpires, too. What is going on with the strike zone, Marcel? I mean, I've never seen anything like that before. I mean, maybe they're actually trying to speed up the game, too. I mean, if you look at all the strike zone of even yesterday's game and a lot of the times that are high fastballs. I mean, I know the strike zone thing on TV tends to, you know, make us biased in what we're actually seeing, but some of the pitches you see, like the sliders outside, inside.
It's crazy. And that's why I talked about it last week on the show. I think it was last week. Memories are going quickly at my age. But I think it was last week I was talking about robotic umpires, you know, just at least for behind the plate to accurately call balls and strikes. You can have the other umpires out in the field and stuff, but, you know, I think it's time to have some kind of device that calls the balls and strikes and makes it fair, you know, makes the game fair, because that, how many times have we seen the umpire call something that's supposed to be a strike, a ball, and then the inning continues and it turns into a disaster and the other team gets, you know, hits or hits a home run and the inning was supposed to be over, you know?
It just changes the momentum of the game, really.
It really does.
When it's supposed to be a strike three call, I mean, I go back to 98. Every time I see that, you know, a lot of us old Padre fans remember 98 when Mark Langston threw that pitch to, I think it was Tino Martinez, and we know it was a strike three. It was a strike three right down the middle, and the umpire called it a ball. And what's happened to the next pitch or next couple pitches? Martinez hits a home run.
There you go.
The whole entire game. Game one, the Padres were playing really well. Langston does not get a called strike three, and then history of that game is over. I mean, granted, the Padres had a big hill to climb when they had to, you know, beat the one of the best teams in baseball.
Yeah, the Yankees.
Yankees in 98. Oh, man. But still, I mean, that could have changed a lot. I mean, if the Padres were to somehow take game one, you just never know. I mean, heck, the Yankees would have probably won 4-1, but still, it would have changed the psyche of the team. It may have helped them out throughout the series. But still, it's things like that where the umpire just, you know, it shouldn't be. Umpires like have a lot of ego.
Too much ego.
Yeah, they tend to like, I mean, look, when they complain about Manny and stuff, it's like all these complaints about Manny. It's like let's pick on Manny all the time. Let's do this. Manny had a legitimate gripe when it was, I think it was last year when they, you know, he's arguing balls and strikes and stuff. It's like, come on, man. It's like, it's completely preposterous.
It is with these freaking umpires. It's just, you don't know what to do. Just wring your hands. Okay, there goes our music. Our time's up for today. Thank you, E.T., for E.T. Phone Home. Don't forget to do that. And it's great having you on. Thanks for stopping by on the telephone, and we'll talk on Twitter. All right, that does it for the Friar Phil Show for this week. Going to have another one for you next week. Not sure who the guest is going to be, but it should be something fabulous. Till then, take care. Take care of yourself. And by all means, keep it lit.